The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Wow, that was quick. I just slipped on the headsets, and it's like I hear Devin Henry is our producer, and he says, go. So we're going, right? Okay, good morning. In for Brad Sessmatt, I'm Jeff Munn. Excuse me. I just got done telling Devin this. I have been dealing with a virus for the last 3 weeks. I feel fine. I feel great, you know, top of the world. But I'm coughing. So if I cough during this, my apologies. And I'm not nearly as sick as I would make it sound. I feel fine. I feel great. And I'm glad to be here on a Thursday. Now, why am I here? Well, Brad and Eric are in Las Vegas, which is the West Coast basketball capital of the world right now, because there are a plethora of tournaments that have either been played or will be played. This team that I work for right here, Arizona State Women's Basketball, they just finished a tournament in Las Vegas, the Pac-12 tournament. And I have some thoughts on Las Vegas as a site for Pac-12 championship play coming up a little bit later on in the show. But we are going to be a basketball-centric show today. Our buddy Kyle Dodd, radio analyst for Arizona State, will join us coming up in the next segment to preview tonight's Pac-12 tournament game between ASU and UCLA. And take it from a couple of different standpoints. Number one, the feeling is, among a lot of people that cover the team on a regular basis, that the Devils are playing their best basketball of the year right now. Winners of four of their last five, the big win Saturday over Arizona. They are playing a team in UCLA. They only met once during the regular season, and I do believe they defeated them at Pauley Pavilion in Los Angeles. So we'll preview the game with Kyle. We'll also get some thoughts from him on what tonight's game does to ASU's NCAA tournament resume. Personally, I think they're in. Certainly losing tonight would not make things easier or better. So take that. I mean, it gets dicey if ASU loses tonight to UCLA. But I still think, overall, I think they're in. But we'll go over that. Bill Gutekunst will join us. Goody at the movies. He'll have some comments about this week's little controversy involving Tucker Carlson. And isn't it like every week now some commentator or somebody in Washington newsmaking is getting themselves into trouble? Now, in any event, we'll talk about that. And he will preview a movie that I really, 5 feet apart, which has a chance, I think, to be a really profound movie. Just looking at the previews and reading some of the stories, it is a fascinating story. A bit of a tearjerker, but has a very powerful message. Bill will talk about it coming up later on in the show. As I said, Devin Henry is here with us. He is not on the e-cam or in the e-chair, which may be a benefit in his regard, but he is here nonetheless, pulling everything together. And I would anticipate that you'll hear a lot from Brad and Eric at right here at sports360az.com as the days progress in Las Vegas. But let's get to the news of the day. It is brought to you by Sagicor Now. And I know that Brad always talks about Sagicor Now. And when I come and do this show, I mention it too. And here's a big reason why you should consider Sagicor Now for life insurance. And we talk quite often about, you know, the what-if factor, if you could not provide for your family. Well, another good reason to go with Sagicor Now is that they will answer your questions. I know as a father of two that life insurance is something I got to have, but I'm very confused about how you get from point A to point B in terms of if I need it, if something happens, if I become incapacitated, how does my family get what they're entitled to through a life insurance policy? Well, Sagicor's great agents will guide you through that process. They'll explain it to you. And when you develop a relationship with Sagicor Now, that's exactly what it is, a relationship. And you have people in your corner all through the process. And so I certainly recommend Sagicor Now, not just because of the peace of mind that it brings you right now, but the peace of mind in knowing that Sagicor will be there when you need them, when you need to get a question answered immediately. That's why it's so important to contact SagiCorps and SagiCorps now and get that peace of mind. The Suns lose last night. They basically collapsed in the fourth quarter, losing to the Utah Jazz 114-97. Tough night at the office, a poor fourth quarter, being outscored by 14. Mitchell with 26 for the Jazz. Rudy Gobert at 18 points and 20 rebounds. Suns were led by Devin Booker with 27 points. He also had 6 assists and 4 rebounds. A lot of people were anxious to see how the Suns would follow up that big win Sunday night over Golden State. And as I say, it was a fairly close game most of the way, but Utah pulled away at the end, wins it by 17. The Suns now go on the road. They have Houston Friday night and New Orleans on Saturday on a quick two-game trip to the South. And again, be interesting to see how they follow. Does the Golden State win carry over in any way? It's very hard to tell. And certainly we'll be watching with great interest to see how they do during this two-game swing. In Las Vegas yesterday, the University of Arizona's season came to an end. They lost to USC, a game that was not terribly, it was a close game at the half. And then Arizona just struggled to score points in the second half, especially at the beginning of the second half, and USC ended up cruising to a double-digit victory. The story after the game was obviously Sean Miller, and again, the questions being raised. I always love this. I understand why people in the media have to ask these questions, but at the same time, it's like, what kind of answer are you expecting? So Sean Miller, who had delivered an impassioned speech to the fans in Tucson on Saturday after the U of A game, he was described, in fact, Greg Hansen of the Arizona Daily Star had a column today noting how calm and composed Sean Miller was during timeouts when his team was struggling. And then he got his seniors out of the game with a minute to go, spent a lot of time standing on the sidelines talking to them. So he was asked after the game, was this your final game as the head coach at the University of Arizona? And he said no. And then the the question came up, did you discuss things or have you discussed your future with the administration? And again, the response was no, no comment. So this has been obviously a difficult time for everybody connected with the University of Arizona men's basketball program, and I have a feeling that we're not at the end point yet, that we've got a long way to go on this. 78-65 was the final, by the way. Let me just say this as a Sun Devil, and I do preface it that way. There's no joy in watching what's going on down in Tucson, at least from my standpoint. I'm older now, and I don't get caught up in, you know, I love beating the U of A, but I don't sit there and rub salt in their wounds because it's just I'm at an age where that just, you know, it doesn't make any sense to me. But I do hope that for the people down there, and I have a lot of friends down there, I'm hopeful that we get some closure to some degree. We get a resolution to all this. It's been a year now since this story broke about the FBI investigation, all the things that go along with it. Sean Miller's job has been hanging in the air for the last year. It's time to get this resolved. And I understand that you have to go at the pace that the federal government wants to go. They're not going to rush things along just for your benefit. But I am deeply hopeful that we can get this resolved for everybody's sake and move on. And I don't know whether or not Sean Miller will be back as the coach. I will tell you this, he's an outstanding basketball coach. And if there's anything that has come out of this in terms of a silver lining, it's that the people in Tucson who do have a tendency to be a bit spoiled about their men's basketball program have gotten off Sean Miller's back. And you see more sympathy towards Sean Miller amongst the U of A fan base, who a couple of years ago just wouldn't accept anything from him unless he went to a Final Four, which he obviously has not done yet. But they have a top-flight recruiting class coming in. There's a lot to look forward to. And they just got to get the rest of this resolved, and hopefully it will be. Tonight, Arizona State and UCLA. Kyle Dodd will come on with us in the next segment to preview the game. The Devils did beat UCLA in Los Angeles. It's a scary game because UCLA's got a lot of talent. Their biggest issue has been coaching. Steve Alford was let go in late December. Murray Bartow took over as head coach. And when I watch them play, I'm just going to say this. They look to me to be like a team that has tuned Murray Bartow out, that they're just going to go out and play. Now, that's a dangerous thing. If they go out and they play lights-out basketball tonight, ASU could be done in one game. On the other hand, ASU has played better, and they may just roll to Saturday night and win the Pac-12 tournament. Who knows? But I'll tell you what. We'll take a break. When we come back, Kyle Dodd will join us, ASU's radio analyst. We'll preview tonight's game. And does ASU need to win this game to lock up a bid to the NCAA tournament? We'll discuss that with KD coming up. This is the Brad... Oh, one thing, 30 seconds before we go to break. I'm sorry about this, Devin. Kyler Murray did have his pro day yesterday. I don't care. The draft is 6 weeks away. It's 6 weeks. Let it go. You know what? I would never want to be in Phoenix radio right now on a regular basis. Because every day, Kyler Murray, Kyler Murray, Kyler Murray. Josh Rosen, Josh Rosen, Josh Rosen. Will Josh Rosen stay? Will they draft Kyler Murray? Will Kyler Murray come in and do... Enough! It's 6 weeks away, people. All right, we're going to a break, and we're not talking about Kyler Murray with Kyle Dodd right after this on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Back on a Thursday on the Brad Sesmatt Show, I'm Jeff Munn for Brad. Tonight in Las Vegas, Arizona State, and UCLA. Now, last Friday in Vegas, the ASU women played UCLA, and it didn't work out too well. So it's bounce back time. And to get a perspective and a preview of tonight's game, let's head up to Las Vegas and talk to the mayor of the Las Vegas Strip, Kyle Dodd, who joins us live. Are you at shoot-around? Are they still at shoot-around, KD?
No, you know how they have the limited shoot-around. You get 30 minutes. You can't even touch the basketballs until that clock goes off. It was a quick one today, but... We just walked back across the street. The team's at breakfast right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you've done your breakfast at Hash House a Go-Go, I hope.
Not today. I got the free breakfast today.
But oh, okay. Well, you know what?
We keep winning.
You know what they say in sports, Kyle? If it's free, it's for me, and I'll take three. There you go.
Exactly.
This is it's interesting, this happens now in the Pac-12 with the changes in the schedule. The Devils played the Bruins once. This is a team to me is dangerous because they're awfully athletic, and if they go out there and they get rolling, they could be really hard to deal with. And I'm talking about UCLA.
Oh yeah, I think definitely. I think most people had them kind of checked out. That's kind of how they finished the season. They're obviously playing for an intern coach. But with their talent level, when they're engaged, and we saw it yesterday when they played Stanford, they're as good as anybody. I think their talent might be the best in the league. So they are a scary team. And, you know, now they won a game. Now they have something to play for. You know, they think they can win a couple games in a couple days and get to the dance. So very dangerous game for the Devils. I think I like the matchup, and I think a lot of people wanted to play UCLA over Stanford. That being said, you know, now that they're, like I said, locked in, should be an interesting game.
It should be indeed. It'll be at 6 o'clock tonight. Pac-12 Network, I believe, has the TV coverage, but keep the TV sound turned down because Kyle and Tim Healy will have the radio call tonight. And we never permit anybody to just listen to the Pac-12 Network. That's a violation of the law in Sun Devil country. You just touched on this, and I've heard this a couple times the years that, in fact, last year in my travels with the women's team, they had to play the play-in round, basically, and then played Oregon State the next night and beat Oregon State. It was a 3-seed, and somebody said, well, ASU got a little momentum because they got on the floor. Does UCLA have any kind of advantage tonight because they played a game yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know this. Money, but you know, being around it, I think the teams that play the first day, first of all, it's really extremely tough to win four games in 4 days, so that very rarely happens. I think it's only happened one on the men's side, and that was Colorado. So last year was in LA, but that being said, it just seems like that team that plays that Wednesday game comes out, and they usually start really fast on Thursday. And then, you know, you have the team on, you know, that's got the bye, that's kind of tries to work themselves into the game. And then, you know, eventually your hope is to wear them down, you know, with the minutes and the energy they had to spend the night before, your hope is to wear them down. But yeah, I've seen that. I know you've seen that on the women's side, but I've seen that a number of times. A team that played Wednesday comes out and they're already kind of firing on all cylinders just because they have a good rhythm because they played the night before.
Now, one thing I think can be said with great certainty, and I've read this in a couple of stories today, but I saw it with my own eyes. The Devils are playing their best basketball of the year right now. Would you agree?
I think so. I mean, you know, everybody talks about the inconsistency and the up and down nature of this team, and really it hasn't been. I mean, they were picked to finish sixth, got the 2 seed. They played really well throughout the year. I think obviously the lowest points were tough because they were such tough losses. But over the last couple of months, I mean, yeah, obviously the Oregon game was a bad, you know, a blowout loss, but you know, that's going to happen when you go through a season. And outside of that, they're winning on the road. They're taking care of business at home. They're playing hard. They're doing all the little things. I think they're hitting their stride, and I think it's the right time to do it. Obviously, you want to be heading into tournament play, playing your best basketball.
We're talking with Kyle Dodd, ASU basketball radio analyst. There's a lot of great talent on this ASU roster, and when I go to games at Wells Fargo, I always think to myself, Rob Edwards is the guy that as he goes, so goes the team. But I think it's becoming fairly obvious now that this team goes the way Remy Martin goes, right?
Yeah, I mean, Remy he's unbelievable. I think it was tough to see him left off the first team. I thought he was, and no disrespect to McKinley Wright, he's a heck of a player at Colorado, but, you know, I thought Remy was the best point guard in the league the entire Pac-12 season. But, you know, he's done such a great job of kind of observing the first couple minutes of the game and seeing what kind of style he has to play. Is it a floor game? Is it a distributor? Is it an energy guy? Is it a defensive game for him? Is it a shot, you know, a game where he's going to have to take a higher volume of shots? And he's just been able to pick those spots. And I don't think there's a better guard in the league right now than Remy. But I do, to your other point, I do feel like this team is a different team. When Rob Edwards is making shots and playing well, this team can play with anybody in the pack, anybody in the country.
Yeah, and we've seen that over the course of the season, that when they're at their top level of their capabilities, they can play with anybody in the country. This is also a time of year where coaches are always going to talk about the importance of rebounding. But I think one thing that has gone unnoticed or undiscussed about ASU this year is their ability to rebound. They've got guys in there that can control the glass. And it is true, this time of year, if, you know, rebounds equal championship, not necessarily rings, but championships.
Yeah, I think you got to win the glass. It's so important to finish defensive possessions by clearing the glass, and the Devils have done a great job of that this year. I think they've only been out-rebounded something like 6 or 7 times on the season, and, you know, a couple of them have been, just 1 or 2 rebounds. But when they're at their best, they're getting on the glass, and it's just so tough. You paralyze another team when you force them to have a long possession, take a tough shot, and then you get the rebound, you're going the other way. It's really tough on teams. So I think that's a huge key for the Sun Devils tonight.
A couple other things, big picture, and we're talking with ASU basketball radio analyst Kyle Dodd, Jeff Munden for Brad Sesmat. I'm watching the Arizona game yesterday. Roxy Bernstein and Don McLean, I did watch the Pac-12 Network and listen to them. And they talked about the fact that the conference, there are a number of schools within the league that have really strong recruiting classes come in. We know how well Bobby Hurley has recruited over all the last couple of years. I keep telling people this down year in the Pac-12 is just a cyclical thing. And come next year, the conference is going to have a bounce back. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, I think it goes, like you said, it goes in cycles. I think the league has something like 5 guys coming in that are in the top, you know, 25 recruits in the country. And obviously Arizona's got a huge class. You know, we've done a nice job again. You know, everybody looks to be better. The only team I looked at, like, kind of maybe take a step back would be Oregon State, just because they're losing, you know, some veteran players. But outside of that, everybody should be better, I think, in my opinion. So I think the league will be right back to where it normally is.
Okay, a couple more things, and I'll get you out of here after two more questions. Number one, you are playing UCLA tonight. If the Devils win, that's going to start the rumor mill at about 500 miles an hour on who's the next coach at UCLA. Are you hearing any scuttlebutt about what the Bruins may be thinking of doing?
There's been so many names thrown around, especially over here, you know, the last couple of days. By the way, it was incredibly nice to have a bye yesterday, knowing that six teams will go home before you even play a game was pretty cool.
I can sign that one on the dotted line.
But just to listen to other people around the league and what their speculation is, and you know, I've heard Kelvin Sampson, I've heard Musselman, I've heard Luke Walton, I've heard and some of the names seem really outrageous, and some of the names seem that might be a fit. But obviously, with the tradition there, it's going to be a hire that's going to have to move the needle for the LA crowd, and we'll see. I think it'll be interesting because that's not a job that I think a lot of coaches really think is a great job anymore, just in the sense that the expectations are still that you're supposed to be like they were when John Wooden was there, and really, you know, the reality is it's tougher than you think there now, and the league's tough, so we'll see. It'll be interesting for sure.
Is there any chance in your mind, and I'm going to give you a name, and I know it's crazy, but I have a theory, is there any way Rick Pitino ends up with that job?
I mean, that's a name that I've heard tossed around too. I have heard that UCLA doesn't like the idea of anybody that's had, you know, some issues in the past. They want a guy that's, you know, that's pretty clean, you know, in the sense that they just don't want to deal with, you know, having to answer those questions, which in my mind would probably eliminate Kelvin Sampson too, just because of what he's been through. So, it'd be a name and a hire that would move the needle for sure in the basketball world. So, it's going to be interesting. It really is, because, you know, UCLA, obviously, like we said, with the history of their program, they're going to want to get a guy that can lead them back to the prominence, you know, the times in Bruin land.
Absolutely. Last one, and I appreciate you doing this on short notice. I think I texted you like at 10 minutes before we went on the air. I don't think ASU needs to win this game to get in the tournament. They're projected as a 10 seed right now by Joe Lunardi. That tells me they're in. A loss, it makes things a little dicier, but I don't think this is a must win in the sense of you've got to win it to get in the tournament. I think they're pretty safe right now, don't you?
Yeah, I think so. I think you run the risk, if you do lose, you run the risk of just having to sweat it out a little bit. I think that they would at least be in that first four in Dayton, which we obviously experienced last year. But I think, you know, for this crowd and this team, I think they'd rather just be safe and win. You know, the best thing to do would be win three games, and you know you're sitting pretty. But I think you're right. I think they've done enough to this point to lock up a bid. It's just a matter of where and when. And at this point, I told someone this morning, I'd play the Warriors in the middle of the Middle East right now. We're going to the tournament again. So I think it should be interesting. Devils have had definitely had a good year and built their resume, and I think it's good enough to get them into the dance.
And what a great accomplishment to go back-to-back years. That hasn't been done in a while. Kyle, I owe you one, pal. You did this on short notice, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate it. Have a good show tonight. Be sure to hit the Wiki Up Trading Post on the drive back for a patty melt. That's my recommendation. And have fun up there. Get us a win tonight, pal.
I will, money. You know, I'll always do anything for you. I wouldn't have done this for like Healy or one of those guys.
I appreciate that.
Money, so.
He's obviously not within listening distance, or you wouldn't have said that. I know that for sure.
Definitely not Sesmat. I wouldn't have done it for
Brandon. Yeah, right. And look out for him, because he's wandering around Vegas right now. Hey, thanks,
right,
pal. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, money.
You got it. Talk to you soon. Kyle Dodd, as the great Fred Flintstone once said, he's one of the good ones. And we appreciate him doing that. I'm going to take a break. When I come back, I've got a few thoughts to share about. We haven't talked about Grand Canyon, and I apologize for that. They've got a big game tonight, too, up in Vegas in the WAC tournament. We'll discuss that, and I'll have a few thoughts to share about Las Vegas and the Pac-12. We'll do that after a break. This is the Brad Sesmat Show on a Thursday, where you get all kinds of great sports information, including what will happen tonight in Vegas. That just happens to be sports360az.com. Back on the Brad Sesmat Show. Again, my apologies if I'm coughing. Well, I am coughing. What am I talking about? There has been, I don't know what this is, but there has been a strain that has been going around, and it is not pleasant. And I thought it was allergies. It's not. It's something else entirely. But just the same, I just wanted to apologize in advance. We have been talking college basketball. Arizona lost to USC yesterday. ASU plays UCLA tonight. The situation, we can't overlook Grand Canyon because obviously the Lopes have a rather large game of their own tonight at the WAC tournament in Las Vegas at the Orleans. Brad and Eric, of course, will be there checking that out as well. And the Lopes, who are seeded third in the WAC tournament, will take on Seattle University tonight at 8:30. That's the last game of the day at the WAC tournament, 8:30 tip-off. I believe that is on ESPN+. Plus. If you have Watch ESPN, you can probably get that. You can probably get the coverage. And if I'm not mistaken, this is interesting. Sed Bonner, the one-time Arizona Rattlers quarterback, is doing the TV analysis tonight. So that's very interesting. Now, let me say this about Grand Canyon, and they've struggled down the stretch of the season. I don't think too many people would have believed that they'd be a three seed going into this tournament, but they have had injuries. And I think that's a big explanation as to why they have had their struggles, and struggles being a relative term. Gerard Martin went down for the season late January with a knee injury. And they really haven't been quite at the same level since. But I will say this, they are still very capable of winning that tournament and getting the automatic berth into the NCAAs. So even with the injuries, you still, if they get past Seattle tonight, a team that they have struggled with, I know everybody amongst the Grand Canyon community would love to have one more go-round with New Mexico State. The two games were very competitive and close. New Mexico State won in Las Cruces on a half-court shot at the buzzer. I mean, what can you do? And then they won right after the Gerard Martin injury here at in Phoenix. So I think everybody with Dan Marley's program would like to get another crack at New Mexico State. And we'll see. It starts tonight with Seattle University. Again, it's an 8:30 tip. And that works out kind of nice schedule-wise if you're into local basketball. You've got the ASU game at 6, and then you transition right into the Grand Canyon game. The other thing that's good about finishing third, you wouldn't have to play New Mexico State until the championship game. And it says here that that's Sunday, but I believe it's Saturday night. Their notes say it's Sunday, but I think that could be a typo. And the championship game will be set. Well, it has to be. It has to be Saturday night because selection shows on Sunday. So good luck to the Lopes. Now, a few thoughts about Las Vegas. And for those who are not aware, I do the play-by-play for Arizona State's women's basketball team. I always point the wrong way. See that? Okay, there we go. For the first time, the Pac-12 held its women's conference tournament in Las Vegas at the MGM Grand Garden Arena. Charlie Turner Thorne, ASU's head coach, and I had discussed this on a number of occasions. In the 15 years I've been doing the games, the tournament has gone from San Jose to Los Angeles to Seattle and now down to Las Vegas. Charlie Turner Thorne had pushed for Las Vegas for a couple of reasons. Obviously, it's easier for ASU fans to get to Las Vegas, but she made the point that for everybody in the conference, Las Vegas is a destination city. There's obviously things to do aside from the basketball. Hotel rooms are plentiful, and flights are easy to get from anywhere on the conference map. Even at Washington State, you drive to Spokane. There's at least 4 or 5 nonstops every day on various airlines to Las Vegas. And I will say this, having been there last week, it's the first time in 15 years that I've been at a Pac-12, Pac-10 tournament where every school in the league had a fan base. I mean, the teams that are at the bottom of the standings will bring parents. There might be 10, 20 people. But ASU played Colorado, who finished last. They were the 12 seed. There's easily 300 to 400 fans all decked out in Colorado gear. I've never seen that before, and it convinces me that the Pac-12 needs to keep as many of its championship events in Las Vegas. Why do I bring this up? Well, I happened to stay at the Mandalay Bay last week, and I could look outside my room. And right across I-15 from the Mandalay Bay is that beautiful, what is going to be a state-of-the-art football stadium to house the Las Vegas Raiders, beginning in 2020. The stadium will host the NFL draft this time next year. Hopefully by then the Cardinals will have decided whether or not they're drafting Kyler Murray. I can't listen to radio in town right now. I can't. I love those guys. I love everybody who hosts shows. I can't listen to it because every time you turn around, we're going to discuss whether the Cardinals are going to draft Kyler Murray. And it's not their fault. The majority of the public, I'm getting off topic here, Devin, I'm sorry. The majority of the public wants that. We're obsessed with football. We can't get enough talk about Kyler Murray. I can, so I just kind of like, hey, you know what? Get back to me the day before the draft. In any event, the stadium will be ready in 2020. I think it's really important, and this is one man's opinion, that the Pac-12 start discussions now, if they haven't already, to get their football championship game into Las Vegas. Now, they've staged it the last several years at Levi Stadium in Santa Clara. Beautiful stadium, great city, but nobody goes. It's very poorly attended, and some of that is you don't know until literally a week before who's in the game. So it's very hard to sell tickets. I've always contended, and I really believe this now that I've seen it with my own eyes, put the championship event in Las Vegas and you will get a big crowd. You might get a sellout every year at what is now called Raiders Stadium in Las Vegas because it is a destination city. And you don't want to see another conference. Would I be shocked at some point if a mid-major conference, not named the Mountain West, wanted to go in and stage their championship game in Vegas? Certainly the Mountain West would love to do it, but I really believe the Mountain West couldn't fill that stadium. If you've got Fresno State and Boise State, I think that's a tough sell. But if you're the Pac-12 and you're Washington against USC or Stanford against Arizona State, you're selling every seat. And at the end of the day, a league that has taken its lumps, and the Pac-12 has taken a few, they need something to feel good about. And I think moving the championship game to Vegas, as soon as that stadium is finished and they've cut the ribbon, they ought to say, hey, guess what? We're putting the title game in here. I think that would be vitally, vitally important. One thing before we get out and get ready for Goody. This story about basically cheating the admissions system at several major universities. Bill Plaschke of the Los Angeles Times today, page one column in the sports section, called for the dismissal of USC athletic director Lynn Swan. It's not often that any columnist with any newspaper will be so direct, but he said it. It's in plain, bold type. USC needs to get rid of Lynn Swan as the AD. And his reasoning is very simple. It has nothing to do. Now, I've been a critic of Lynn Swan because he's let the football program deteriorate into a sea of mediocrity. There were a lot of people who wanted to see him make a change at head coach. He didn't do it. I think it was financially motivated because the buyout was so expensive. But this is USC, kids. You can't mess around with this. Why did I mention to Kyle Dodd about Rick Pitino? Because UCLA is the standard bearer in Pac-12 men's basketball. I get it. Pitino's got his problems. He's got a checkered past. But trust me when I tell you this. You hire Pitino at UCLA, you've raised the profile of that program like that. And you telling me that he wouldn't want to come in and clean up his legacy and do things the right way and not even have a hint of cheating and build UCLA back into a power? What do you think that would do for Rick Pitino's legacy? It would do a lot. So he would be anxious to do it. USC football is the same thing. Lynn Swan, as the AD, for whatever reason, didn't make a move on Clay Helton. Nice guy, but he's just not capable of being the head coach of such a storied program. And Plaschke's point was simply this. You've already got a scandal in men's basketball with Andy Enfield's program, and that happened on Lynn Swan's watch. Now you've got this situation where non-revenue coaches are participating in this little whatever it is to get students in by faking that they're athletes. And that, too, happened on Lynn Swann's watch. So are we done with the fallout from all this? No, we're just getting started. And I thought it was very interesting that Bill Plaschke came right to the point and said they need to move on from Lynn Swann and they need to do it today. It's not going to happen today, but it's very interesting and a very interesting point made by Bill Plaschke. Bill Gutekunst is coming up next. I've got a little trivia for him. And we're going to discuss Tucker Carlson and a movie that I really think I'll be interested to hear from Goody what he thinks the award potential is of 5 Feet Apart. We'll discuss it and a lot more coming up as the Brad Sesmatch Show continues on a Thursday. Sports360AZ.com. All right, it's Thursday, and as Brad always says, you've got a life beyond sports. Well, I don't, but you do. And to discuss things to look forward to this weekend that don't involve sports, our friend AZ Central media critic Bill Gutekunst joins us. Before we get into the media, I heard our producer saying you're on with Jeff Munn, and you still agreed to come on, which really impresses me. You didn't hang up the phone. Whenever I do this, I always like to throw a little trivia at you.
Absolutely.
You know how much I adore the 1960s TV series Batman, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I learned something a couple of weeks ago I did not know.
I can't believe that.
The character of the Catwoman, which was played so brilliantly. There were three actresses within that franchise that played the Catwoman. Julie Newmar, Lee Merriweather did the movie, and Eartha Kitt did the third season. Not one of them was the original choice to play the Catwoman. The original choice was an actress who had made her name in movies, would go on to be a co-star in a very successful sitcom in the early 70s, but when she was given or offered or pitched the role of the Catwoman, she turned it down. And they went to Julie Newmar.
This is a total guess, but there's a reason behind it. Mary Tyler Moore.
No, but you're close. She produced, her company produced the show that this actress was on.
Valerie Harper?
No.
No. MTM Productions did.
It was not a spinoff of the Mary Tyler Moore show.
Okay,
it was a show about a Chicago psychologist.
Bob Newhart, Suzanne Blanchett.
Suzanne Blanchett, I read this online, was the original choice to play the Catwoman.
And it makes sense.
Perfect to play the Catwoman. And she turned it down.
I'm gonna hang up.
And what's that?
Now I am going to hang up.
But she was the original choice. There are great stories. Just to complete this, and then we'll move on. Each of the three of the Rogues Gallery, the main villains that were on that show, Cesar Romero was not the original choice to play the Joker. It was either going to be Gig Young or Jose Ferrer. They both turned it down. Mickey Rooney was offered the role of the Penguin, and he turned it down. They went to Burgess Meredith. So there was never any. The Riddler was going to be Frank Gorshin. They had him locked up. There was never any choice number two. Ironically, he had a dispute with the producers in the second season and did not do the role. The role of the Riddler in season two was played by John Astin, who was, of course, Gomez Adams.
Yeah, I remember that. I had forgotten that.
That's a little trivia for you. All right,
Goody. That was a good one.
Thank you. I have a hard time keeping up with what's going on with media people in Washington, and so I had to do a little digging today when I knew you wanted to discuss Tucker Carlson. And I guess the basic story is that he did an interview about 10, 11 years ago where he suggested underage marriage is not as serious as forcible child rape, called rape shield laws totally unfair, and once said he would love a scenario involving young girls sexually experimenting. Now, this was done in an interview with that infamous media person, Bubba the Love Sponge. Anyway, where are we at? This is, he's not retracting. He's not apologizing for this.
Absolutely. He's doubling down. But and by the way, it was not one interview. He called into the station often over a course of about 5 years.
I did not know.
And now they've released some more in which he called Iranians or Iraqis. Basically, he said they were like monkeys, they didn't use toilet paper, they didn't, you know, and all these sort of things. Just bad stuff. And it's, I mean, I'm not a huge fan of going back and you know, you said this when you were 14 or whatever. He wasn't 14. I mean, he had already had a successful TV show. The thing that I find somewhat fascinating about Tucker Carlson is he was a good magazine writer. I mean, that's how he got his start.
Right.
And I'm always partial to people who start in print, you know. And then I didn't always agree with him, but he wrote well and he was provocative. He's kind of reminded me of sort of like a J.B. George Will. And now he's turned into this sort of J.V. Sean Hannity. I think that sometimes TV makes people crazy, man. And this was after he had lost his job at CNN, and Fox is, by the way, Fox doesn't have to say anything about it. He was not a Fox employee then.
Right.
It's a private company. And by the way, if he had said these things on Fox, if they're fine with it, that's fine too. This is not a free speech. You know, you.
It's a private company.
Employer, you right now have every right to say something really bad. You know,
yeah,
and the company that you're doing this for has every right to can you because it's a private company. You're doing work for them.
But they also have every right to not can you.
Yeah, yes, they do. Absolutely, it works both ways.
Well,
but I think with Carlson is just sometimes very sort of disingenuous. He used a particularly vile word to describe Martha Stewart's daughter. And it is a word that, ironically enough, Samantha Bee used last year and got a lot of grief about, rightly so.
Yeah.
Including from Tucker Carlson.
Yeah.
Who said that he doesn't know anybody who uses that word. It's like, well, I can think of one guy.
We need to move on to the movie review, but I'm just going to share this. How much money could be derived from a pay-per-view debate between either Tucker Carlson or Sean Hannity against Rachel Maddow? I would sign up for that in a heartbeat.
I would, but my worry is it would be just like dueling platitudes.
Yeah. I know.
I'd probably rather see like Jon Stewart and I don't know, and maybe maybe George Will or somebody like that, or Bill Kristol or somebody like that. I don't know.
But to me, and I'll just say this, and I swear we'll move on. Maddow to me is the most fascinating personality of all the people on these channels, because when I watch her at night, and I don't catch her show every night, but she looks to me like she does not have a script. She doesn't have a teleprompter. She's doing it right off the top of her head. I could be way wrong, but she's the most fascinating of them all.
I used to write about this harshly sometimes about people doing live TV. And then I was called on in my job to start doing some live TV, and I realized,
yeah,
it's
different.
A little tougher gig than it looks. Even those people that come off sometimes looking goofy or dumb or vapid or something like that, they're not. It's an act because you can't really be that way and survive because it just moves too fast. You have to think too fast. I mean, it's tough.
It's very challenging, and I'm saying this as a broadcaster. I find Rachel Maddow to be totally fascinating with the way she does her show. Okay, moving on. The movie this week, I'm really interested to hear your take on what the award potential of a movie like this is. 5 feet apart, excuse me, I've been dealing with a virus and I'm still coughing. 5 feet apart it strikes me as both poignant. It's a rebellious story. It touches a lot of nerves. Just tell me what your thoughts are having seen it.
As in the teenage romance waylaid by terminal illness genre, which is bigger than you might think, it's okay. It starts out pretty good for about an hour and 15 minutes. As you say, I mean, the two leads are really good. She is from Haley Richardson. She's from here. She's from Phoenix. One of the Sprouse twins, like my kids really like them and everything. They're quite good and they rise above what is pretty cliche material. I mean, she has OCD and she has to do everything just right. They both have cystic fibrosis, by the way. and they're hospitalized, not forever, but they're, you know, they've had, you know, they're both in there for a quick setback or something. And she calls it a tune-up. She has to get some drugs. And they meet and they fall in love, but they can. But he's the rebel and she's the good girl, and of course they're going to, you know, attract. But the title comes from cystic fibrosis is not contagious. However, if you have it and somebody else has it, you can give each other really deadly bacteria. So you can't stay more than, you can't get closer than 6 feet apart.
Right.
The movie, as you know, is called 5 feet apart, or 5 feet away, and apart, and that's, that plays into it a little bit. It becomes sort of this empowering thing. After about an hour and 15 minutes, it goes nuts. It just goes off the rails. It does not trust you to be moved or to be sad. It piles on so much drama on top of drama that, I honestly, if a building had fallen on one of them or something, it would have just been, oh, yeah, okay, well, you know, I can see where that fits in. You know, it just, they don't trust the audience.
Right.
That kind of thing drives me nuts. I mean, you had a nice little movie going there, and then you had to, you know, you had to overdo it.
Well, I was quite taken with the previews and the things that I read about it. I don't know if it's necessarily something that's going to get me in the theater. I'm still in that genre of Tuesday night classics at Harkins. I was going to take my daughter. My daughter is an aspiring filmmaker, and I wanted her to take her to see Airplane. Not because it's silly, but I wanted her to watch how they made that film, how they constructed all these quick jokes that you really had to pay attention to get. And we didn't have a chance to get there, and I really regret that. Leslie Nielsen once said, you know, the Airplane kind of gave birth to Police Squad and the TV series. The TV series bombed. It went six episodes and died. And then they came out with the movies, which were big successes, and somebody said to Leslie Nielsen, why did it work as a movie and not as a TV show? And he said, in a movie theater, you're held hostage. You have to watch the screen. A TV series, you can get up and go to the refrigerator, and you've missed the joke completely. And that's why it didn't work as a TV series. And I thought, gee, you know what? I never thought of that. I wanted to take her to see that. Let me get a thought from you, because I don't know if Brad's brought this up. We're a little over time, but what are they going to do? Kick me out? Monday Night Football. Would you just blow it up and start over?
I would. I would retain Booger McFarlane in some capacity, because I think he was actually pretty good. I just said that, you know, this is a perfect chance to do it. You can do it in a rather, not completely, but pretty painless way. And I just think you go out and you get somebody else.
I think I've said this to you in the past. If ESPN really wants to turn Monday night back into a spectacle, there are two guys they can put in that booth. It doesn't matter who's doing play-by-play, although I think Tessitore he's bad. When Kansas City played the Rams, he must have set a world record for the phrase instant classic. Joe, we got it. It's 51-45. We got it, Joe. It's an instant classic. Thank you. We heard you the first 50 times. Okay. There are two guys. I don't care who you put in it play-by-play, but there are two guys you could put in that booth and immediately turn Monday night into must-see TV. Stephen A. Smith and Rex Ryan. And why ESPN doesn't think about doing it is beyond my comprehension.
Well,
am I right? It would put Stephen A. Smith is the modern day Howard Cosell.
Stephen A. Smith.
Uh-oh, did we lose Bill?
Many years ago.
There we go. We lost you for a second.
I'm still Bill, here.
If you could repeat that.
I was just going to say Stephen A. Smith was an intern at the newspaper where I worked a long time ago in North Carolina. No, nobody guessed that he would be. I think you get those personalities in there like that, and of course people are going to watch. I do think that you would have to have the right play-by-play guy. That, I mean, you say it could be anybody. I think
they had the right play-by-play guy. His name's Sean McDonough.
They did. He was great.
And I
liked him so much better than Gruden. I get why you have Gruden, but Sean McDonough is the best.
That's where I would go with it. I also don't understand. You and I haven't talked since the playoffs. I don't get the fascination with Tony Romo. Everybody says, oh, he's great because he can predict plays. Gang, Hank Stram was doing that. Go back and watch the catch, San Francisco against Dallas. As they come to the line of scrimmage, it was a great booth. It's Vin Scully and Hank Stram. And as they come to the line of scrimmage, Hank Stram says, they're going to roll right. And what did Montana do? He rolled right. There's nothing spectacular about a guy who can predict plays. I don't get what the fascination is with Romo.
I should also note that just predicting plays does not make you by itself a good announcer.
No, I agree. And yet every media podcast I listen to, boy, when Tony Romo, you know, when his contract's up, he's going to make a kajillion dollars from some network. Why? Why? He's not that good. He's good, but he's not, you know, it's like, I don't get it. I really don't get it. And if ESPN, it's we could do a whole show on it. And I am over time, and I've held you long enough. But in any event, sometime we'll have to do, let's do our own podcast, Goody, you and me, and we'll solve all these problems in an hour's time.
Let's do it.
All right, Bill, I appreciate it. Enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
You too.
All right, Bill Gutekunst, AZ Central film and media critic, joining us on the Brad Sesmatt Show. We have gone over time. Sorry, Brad, I tied up more gigabytes or whatever they call it on the internet than I was supposed to. But in any event, Brad and Eric are in Vegas. They will have coverage of ASU in the Pac-12 tournament, Grand Canyon in the WAC tournament, all the way through as long as both teams stay in it. You'll get updated stories. You'll get post-game video. Everything you could be looking for, you'll get it right here. And Monday, you'll get a recap of the weekend from Brad right here on the Brad Sesmatt Show on Sports360AZ.com. Thanks for being with us. Have a nice weekend.